Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and with me is my co-host, Dr. Matt Polacek. Well, Matt is in studio, and I am remote.
Well, Alan, it's great to be back with you and on Answers for the Family. For those of you that have been listening, sending in questions and comments, thank you so much.
And please continue to help spread the word that every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show will bring you special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases, entertain.
While bringing answers and options to making your lives happier, healthier, and more successful.
Now, this show will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more.
We'll introduce you to talented authors and new innovations in the areas of health, security, and fun for you and your family.
Now, with our experience working with families in crisis, we've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields who are all working to make this world a better place for all of us.
Well, Alan, we have spent the last couple months diving into some pretty difficult topics, including autism, substance abuse disorder, depression, and a lot of other tough mental illness issues. But today's show is about living a better life.
Yeah, and you know, too often, success is measured by our accomplishments or the material things that we've somehow accumulated. But life should be more about so many greater things than just that. It should be about discovering who we are, why we are here, and the legacy that we're trying to create.
There's so many inspirational and wonderful leaders in our community, in the greater LA area and across the country, that can help us on that journey, and today, we've got two of them.
Yes, Matt. And today we welcome Bob and Susan Karcher. They are award-winning authors of the popular book, Who Are the Joneses Anyway? Stop Living Someone Else's Life and Start Becoming Who You Are Meant to Be. Now, this book, which is their first, is a 2016 International Book Award winner and an Amazon number one new release.
Prior to Bob's current role as an author, speaker, and life coach, Bob worked in executive leadership positions in both the nonprofit and for-profit sectors, including serving as chief operating officer for two subsidiaries of the Fortune 500 Tribune Company, then owner of the Los Angeles Times, Chicago Tribune, and many other print, broadcast, and online media companies.
Susan is an award-winning real estate marketing professional with a passion for helping others through the complex process of real estate transactions. Now, prior to her current roles, Susan successfully served in senior sales and marketing positions in industries as diverse as fashion, publishing, advertising, and education.
Both very accomplished people, and we are excited to welcome you both on Answers for the Family.
Thank you. We're so excited to be here. Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having us on Answers for the Family today.
Well, it sounds like, you know, and congrats on success of the first book. And for our listeners out there that are not familiar with Keeping Up with the Joneses, can you give us a little bit about what the book's about?
Sure. Well, you know, one time or another, most of us have heard the expression, Keeping Up with the Joneses. And that's probably because that phrase is 103 years old. 103 years. It actually started with the title of a comic strip authored by a gentleman named Pop Mamond. And he was satirizing this cultural issue that we have when we look across the fence line and always think that what the neighbor has or a coworker has is greater or better than what we have. And so we start to measure our life's success by that. And this family, this Jones family, they became legendary. The whole world seems to be keeping up with them. They're mentioned in tweets and movies and newscasts, articles and blogs, and in fact, Fox Studios has a movie out this week called Keeping Up with the Joneses. So
yeah,
what is it?
I'm sorry, go ahead. No, I was just going to ask that apparently Hollywood timed that release so that they could somehow piggyback onto the success of your book. So how do you feel about that?
We think that we love that spin. That's fantastic. That's exactly what we were thinking. We had a friend say, hey, they already put your book into a movie. We said, absolutely.
That's right.
That's quick.
So, you know, too often we measure success by our accomplishments, and Alan, in the intro, as you said there, by things that are outward rather than things that are inward. But we're determined that success is not measured by what we have. It is about who we are, what we give, and how we lead our lives. And we want to help our readers just think of the possibilities if they started living their lives in more intentionally and more authentically and doing more of the things that matter most to them in their lives. And they can actually have a life that's less hectic and simpler and yet more full all at the same time. And in our book, we walk our readers through their own Jones's journey and through something we call our Jones's moment. And we ask them relevant questions and ask them to be brave enough to seek the answers to some tough questions in their lives.
Now, you just brought up the term Jones's moment. So if you could share with our listeners an example of what is a Jones's moment.
Yes, well, absolutely. You know, a Jones's moment is this moment in life that Susan and I had a major transition in, and so we affectionately call it now just that. It's really that moment when you realize that other things in life are better than your stuff. And for us, it was we had to realize that God was better than stuff. And there had to be something better than just chasing the next, best, latest, greatest, shiny new object, gotta have it now syndrome. And that's what we are doing, living this life of a designer life. And it's that moment when you realize that.
You had mentioned that you guys, Susan and yourself, had found, or not found, but had kind of leaned on God during this time period. And to me, my background is a psychologist, and there's a ton of studies out there that people with religious affinity or that, you know, believe in a specific religion have lower rates of depression, lower rates of suicide. Do you guys attest that to having something greater than yourself to believe in, or is it just having anything, just having some specific thing to believe in?
Well, absolutely. We do believe that we do need to look for hope. And we believe that God gives us hope. And we found ourselves getting wrapped up in whatever the world had to offer us, the things and the, you know, everything that we wanted in life. And we thought that if we acquired and achieved and got everything that we needed, that we would be okay. But when all was said and done, we weren't okay. We had to look at ourselves and say, what are we doing here? And it was, I mean, we're ordinary people just like, you know, your listeners, hardworking. And then we just discovered we were in a race we didn't realize we were in, and we were looking for the wrong things. And the one thing that we needed, the one thing we always had, was God. But we weren't looking there. We were looking for everything else. And sometimes when we think about keeping up with the Joneses, we think it's all materialism. But sometimes it's deeper than that. Sometimes we search for trying to find acceptance, trying to figure out who we are and why we're here. And that's why we do fall in the depression sometimes, because we don't know what we're looking for. We don't know what we're doing. And so we look for other things that we think will satisfy it. But if we look deep down inside, it was there the whole time. God made us perfect in His image. We just have to know that and live it and believe it. And that took us a while to get there. So absolutely, there is something greater than we are, and it's better than our stuff, and it's God.
Well, Susan, yeah, I couldn't agree more, and I think we're seeing a time right now in society where we're having a lot of difficulties right now. And, you know, what's your thoughts in regards to, because we have some people who are holding traditional values, you know, we're trying to focus maybe on getting education. There are others that are preferring that maybe we encourage people to just follow their dreams. You know, where do you guys sit on this evolution or these changes that we're seeing most recently?
Well, you know, there's nothing wrong with having things. God wants us to have great things because He blesses us with that. And He says, use what will you do with what I have given you? And it's as simple as that. God created us to be all that we can be, but we have to be the best. And if it is to educate yourself, absolutely do it. If it is to be a better person and learn how to give, not just money, but give of your heart and give of yourself, then do that. If it's to mentor someone because God gave you the skills to be able to do that and to breathe life into someone and encourage them, then that's what you do. There's nothing wrong with doing the things that that we want to do, as long as we do it for the right reasons.
When you
that make sense?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, when you guys were discussing the Joneses moment and kind of having this shift in your life, and you guys have been married, I think, over 15 years, and it sounds like you've done this together as a pair. And I'm our listeners out there, a lot of people will have a spouse on board, not on board, or parents on board, not on board, when they have this Joneses moment. Take me through this transition. As far as is this a happens in a day, or is this a period of weeks and weeks, just really kind of buckling down, trying to appreciate being in the moment, the present, and to kind of get over that hump of really, you know, looking inward versus outwards?
Well, that's a great question, and it really is the latter. It's you know, you might make that realization that we call your Joneses moment in a moment, but there's a lot of buildup that comes along getting to that. For us, it happened to be, you know, we're living a certain life and achieving everything that we thought the world expected of us to achieve, and other folks wanted us to achieve, and then something dramatic happened that happened to millions of people across the world, is the Great Recession. And all of a sudden, we found ourselves living in a different world. We found myself laid off from my 25-year publishing career. We found Susan struggling in the real estate marketing business. And it was that in the midst of those times and those years, we really struggled. And we had to look at ourselves and say, what are we doing here? We're trying to keep up with the Joneses, somebody we've never met, somebody the world doesn't even know who they are. And that's when Susan, in her wisdom, asked one of those questions that she knows how to ask so well, said, who are the Joneses anyway? And why don't we stop living someone else's life and start living the life that we were meant to lead? And so it's a process that culminates into a moment that then hopefully is followed by a life of some transformation into a different way of living.
Now, I think for both of you, you know, and I appreciate the fact that you're touching on what a lot of people went through. I mean, most of us, you know, our houses all of a sudden weren't worth what they used to be worth, and many, many people were laid off. How did your life change through writing and publishing this book and making that shift within your own life?
Well, you know, that really came down to having to think differently and live differently. And, you know, when you have a moment like that, you've got to look yourself in the mirror and say, wow, who am I really? Am I really a culmination of titles and baubles and stuff and my big house? Or am I something much more significant than that? And for me, and I'll just be really authentic here with you both, for me, my biggest struggle wasn't even getting rid of the stuff. It was getting rid of my identity. Because my identity had gotten all wrapped up in titles called Chief Operating Officer that you introduced me with, and things like that, and Fortune 500 company, and the car that I drove, and the house that I lived in. And that was really the biggest struggle I had to go through. And so I really had to start to think differently about who I was and then live a much different life. And sometimes the hardest thing to do is to look in the mirror and say, you are good enough. And that's so fearful for so many people. It was for me. And I had to get past that fear. And I had to say, ask myself, what is that fear costing me? And in my case, it was costing me joy and contentment and my family. So it really took a life just had to take a much different path.
As I'm listening to you and hearing Susan talk also, I love the concept. I love the idea. And what the first place I go to is, I think I could kind of sustain it for today. And then tomorrow, it would just take, you know, one negative comment from someone or something socially, you know, some kind of social media post or something to kind of throw me off the track. How were you guys able to kind of stay on long enough to where it transformed?
Well, that's, we have to tell you, it is not easy to stay on that track because we get sidetracked all the time. But it's about change. It's about where do we begin to make that transformation? And the bigger question is, are you ready for change? Are you ready to put yourself there and say, I'm going to change? I mean, how do we overcome our personal giants that we all face? And how do we move into move from a life of conspicuous consumption or struggling with keeping up with someone? How do we do that? How do we find pleasure in who we are and what we have? And like I said, it is not easy, but you have to be ready for that change. It's almost like a metamorphosis that needs to take change. You have to leave the Joneses behind and that all-encompassing and dramatic, makeover of the heart and how you view the world and the role that you play in it. Because once a person decides they're going to change, then they can become a new person, different than they ever were before. And it's kind of exciting. It's what we call liberating. When people begin to grasp the reality that they don't have to keep up or that they don't need all this stuff to be, important, but they could just be themselves. They can, it's a huge game changer. You have to say, I'm ready. I'm excited. I want to be different. I don't want to get caught up in that. And you have to figure out what makes you happy. But before you can experience this great liberating time in your life, you have to decide what's important to you and if you're ready to move forward in that decision. Because if you're not, you will never change. We will always go back to what is comfortable to us, always go back in our comfort zone. And sometimes we have to come out of that. And you have to decide, is it time to live a life of less stress, less debt, less hassle, in a life of more joy and more freedom and more fun? But no one can make this choice for you except you. Are you ready to get off of life's treadmill? Because once you are, it will be your defining moment of your life to be free and say, I'm ready to make that change. I love me. I'm okay with me. And that's where you have to be.
Now, as you were saying that, I was visualizing, and one of the visualizations I had was, the hamster wheel, that we're going so fast on the hamster wheel, and we're going. Now, how did it affect your relationship with those around you? Because I'm envisioning, and I'm sort of at that stage now to where I'm trying to simplify a lot of the things in my life. But, how does it affect our children? How does it affect some of the friends closest to us? Or has that changed in the way in which some of them now deal with you?
Well, we think it's a little bit of both. And, we get wrapped up in this thing we call social comparison. That can actually become such a big part of our identity and our relationship, yes, with our kids and our friends and our coworkers. And sometimes it does change our relationships, but the beautiful thing is because this is a journey and not something that just happened overnight and you wake up one morning and sell everything you have and move off and go live in a tent in a desert somewhere, it's something that takes time. What we've discovered with our children and with our friends is they've actually watched us go through this journey, and they're intrigued and encouraged by it, and in some cases have even made significant changes in their lives and asked us. And this is really the genesis of the book. When people started asking us, how'd you do this? What is it that you're doing? And they began to share their stories of frustration and their stories of indebtedness and their stories of even gambling and things to try to keep up. That was the genesis of us writing the book. And people say, thank you. And they say, and some people say, I needed that. And still others will look at us and say, you know what? I'm not trying to keep up with the Joneses. I've never had to in my life. Good for you. Some people actually are very centered and don't have a way to get caught up in this. So relationships change, but because it happens in time with others, it's really successful.
Have you guys noticed your life changing after you wrote the book? Because it sounds like you had your own Jones moment prior to writing the book. And then since you've written it, has this process gotten easier, smoother, or what's changed?
Well, actually, when you have to write a book like this, a couple things happen. One, you really have to process the process that you went through. You have to think about it, and you have to put it on paper. And we had to learn some things about ourselves at really deep moments. That moment of discovering my identity and knowing that that was my real issue came not during our Joneses moment, but came years after that, and even while we're writing the book, that came out loud and clear. And so that changed for us. The other thing that changed is, when you put something like this on paper, you kind of have to walk your talk. And so if we're ever tempted anymore to do something that would look like or appear like we're keeping up with the Joneses, allowed to throw a Rolex watch out there. I don't know. I don't have anything against Rolex watches. They're beautiful. But that just probably wouldn't demonstrate that we're living our walking our talk. And so that's actually been a good thing for us because it's helped keep us accountable. And we think that that has changed. But it's not easy. As Susan mentioned, you know, we still walk into stores and we still see things or onto car lots. And man, we just want that so bad. You know, we could tell you a story of some bowls that we, you know, brought home once. It's a cute little story, but we didn't need those bowls. We might have wanted those bowls, but we didn't need them. And the same thing works with cars and everything else.
The other thing that did change are the conversations that we have with people. And they're deep and they're rich. And people, once we started to share our story with others, they began to share their story with us. And it was just crazy because they would tell us all kinds of different stories about how they were keeping up. I mean, whether it was they wanted their kids to play on great sports teams and so they moved their family, or if they're trying to keep up in a neighborhood, all different levels of education, of status. Any way you slice, dice, and cut this, people were always trying to keep up. And we began to have conversations with people. They were telling us stories about their Joneses moment, and it was just like, wow. And we realized we are not alone. And when we realized this, all of our conversations change now. I mean, some we have people that are just so relieved to get this off their chest and say, how do I do this? Where do I start? You know, I want a different life. And we have other people that say, like, you know, like Bob said, well, no, I'm not a Jones. I've never been one, and I probably never will be one. And then later on, they'll come back and they'll say, wait a minute, I'm kind of stuck in something and I need some help. What can I do? And since Bob is a life coach, he's able to help them through that process. And so it's something that, like he said, has been here for 103 years. It will continue to be here for another a million years if that's what it takes, because we always want more than what we have, or we're just not satisfied, or we're not content with who we are and what we have. We always want more. That's just human nature. But we, like I said, we began to have the conversations where we realized we were not alone, and it was kind of nice to know that we weren't the only ones going through it. And now we get to share stories with all kinds of people, and it's exciting to see that, you know, you get your Joneses moment and you say, okay, I'm okay. I'm going to be all right.
Well, and as you were talking about that, I was thinking about traveling around and being in other countries and such and dealing with other people, and how much of this is the immense commercialization of everything that we do. I know that when my kids were little, we banned TV for a while, from the standpoint of, because they wanted everything that they saw on TV, every toy. So we decided that we would just rent videos or purchase videos so that we didn't have to deal with all of the commercials and all of the, you know, I have to have this. And I notice when I'm in other countries that don't have a lot of that, there seems to be a lot more satisfaction with, you know, just, you know, being outside kicking a soccer ball versus, you know, having to have whatever the latest, greatest toy is. Have you found that?
Absolutely. And, you know, we live in such a fantastically rich culture, the richest society that's ever, you know, existed in the United States at this day and age. And in our book, we talk about Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And he has these five hierarchies, and he walks people through from the very first one, which is, you know, meeting your very basic physiological needs of shelter, water, and food, all the way up to your highest need, which is, this is the one people are trying to get to, which is reaching your full potential. And within that, we tend to mix that up. Rather than starting with our deepest first-level needs, we want to jump right to some mid-level needs, right? Take an automobile, something that they wouldn't even experience in another country. They got to walk just to get their water. You know, we need a car to get to and from work and do our shopping and take our families to places safely. That's fantastic. And that meets a very basic need, but when we take a look at a higher car, a bigger car, or one that's got a certain brand name, you know, sticker on the hood, or emblem on the hood. Is that really still a basic need, or are we trying to meet some other need there, to look a certain way or act a certain way? And to have a certain house. And all of these things start to get into our psyche, and our, you know, we watch our neighbors and our coworkers and others accumulate things, and it just becomes this never-ending spiral.
Well, we are being joined here with Bob and Susan Karcher. Their popular book, Who Are the Joneses Anyway? Stop Living Someone Else's Life and Start Becoming Who You Are Meant to Be. We will continue with them. We're going to take a quick break. Thank you for listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you. And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. And our guests today are Bob and Susan Karcher. They are the authors of Who Are the Joneses Anyway? Stop Living Someone Else's Life and Start Becoming Who You Are Meant to Be. Now, while we were during the commercial, we received a listener question that came in via email. And again, I want to thank everybody that takes the time to do that, either ahead of time or doing it during the show. This one ties right into what we were talking about before the break, where it says, it seems that being prepossessed with having things is a larger issue in the U.S. than most anywhere else in the world. My three children are very demanding about having exactly what they need to, quote, fit in and be accepted by their peers. In such an overwhelming environment of commercialism, how do you think we can influence millions of youth today to start thinking differently? And this is from Linda in San Francisco.
Linda, you are absolutely right. Absolutely right. That's partly why I think we had to make some changes, because we do have four kids. And we thought, the life that we're living, what does that show our children? And me, spending almost 20 years in the garment industry, I understand how important image is, not only to us, but to our kids. Do they have the right cell phone? Do they even have a cell phone? Do they have the right shoes? It's all about the image that we keep. And that's a hard thing. So we have to learn that beauty is not in the eyes of the advertiser, because they're going to win every time. It's in who we are. It's in ourselves, and something that we have to accept. And even when we want things, we had to learn. And maybe this is as simple as it gets, because this is what we use with our children. We had to learn the difference between our needs and our wants. What do we really need, or is it just something that we want? So we came up with an acronym, and it's basically NEED. So have your kids ask themselves, is it a necessity? Do I really need it, or is it something that I just want? And then the next E is explore. Have I explored all of my options? Do I absolutely have to have that, or can I have something else? And the next E is enhance. Will it enhance your life experience? Will it make you a better person? Will it make you smarter? Will it make you, happier? What kind of enhancement will this do for your life? How will it change your experience in life? And the last one, D, is simple. It's decide. Make a decision. And once you make that decision, live with it. Don't second guess it. It's your choice. You made it. Be happy with it. And live with it. And that kind of helps us get through a lot of the challenges of understanding our needs versus our wants. And sometimes we'll look at our kids and we'll say, okay, And they'll say, okay, do I really need it or do I just want it? And they start going through this thing themselves. And in the end, they answer their own question. And so, Linda, that is a great point. Thank you for your question.
And I'll add one more thought there, and that's a great thought. And that NEED acronym that Susan talked about, we still use on a regular basis because we have to continue to hold ourselves accountable and live the life that we want and make sure we don't get back to where we wanted to be. But so much with our kids is the example that we as adults lead, right, just culturally. My grandmother, I know, if she came back to life today, would wake up and go, what in the world has happened? When did $3,000 birthday parties for a two-year-old become vogue? And when did $120 pairs of sneakers for a three-year-old become vogue? And so sometimes we allow these things and we teach our kids by the way that we behave as adults, by the cars that we drive, the decisions we make, the priorities in our life. And if we focus on the right priorities, so much of what our kids learn is caught by us, not taught by us. And they'll catch the way that we live our lives. And so if we can change the way we do it, we really believe that our kids will start to learn different things too.
I really enjoy that caught by us. I really like the Maslow comparison and the acronym of NEED. When I'm thinking about my own daughter growing up, and I remember trying, kind of thinking hard what to buy her, and I would order something online, and she'd spend most of her time actually playing with the box that it came in. and really just yes. This kind of nice creative moment. And I sit back and I smile, and I do feel, as a parent, a role to emulate and to kind of put on the type of the person that I want them to be. But one of the things that comes up for me as you guys were talking really is to be in the moment and to, I remember this book, The Precious Present, I believe it was called, and this young boy is looking for this present from his father, and the father keeps asking him questions about it, and what he realizes is being in the moment is the present. And as I'm sitting here talking to you guys, I'm thinking that a lot of this stuff is really just being present and being, having a spiritual aspect to being in the moment.
Absolutely. And there's a saying that says, goes something like this. It says, nobody on their deathbeds wish that they had worked more or bought mm-hmm. more toys or given their kids more stuff. They wish they had spent more time with their family. And I think in reverse, that's what the kids really want, right? And we can create such amazing moments that are irreplaceable. And that any other gift that we could possibly give them could not carry a candle to it. And so you're right, in that moment is such an important concept. I like that.
And time is the greatest gift that we can give. And I wasn't there when she played with the box, but I can only imagine that you sat on the floor with her yeah. and played with the box or in the box or put her in the box or did something fun. And that's what it's about. It's mm-hmm. about building our families, and next time she looks at a box, she's going to think, oh, Daddy was there playing with the box. Better than any gift you could have ever given her. And time, you're absolutely right, it's the best thing we can give ourselves and our families. I mean, we spend nights where we do turn off the TV, just like you said, and we play games, and we do family night, family game night, and our kids are in their, 28, 29, our two oldest, and they have game nights at their houses now. And that's what they do. And they'll invite us over sometimes and say, hey, we're having game night with our friends. Do you guys want to come over? Every chance we get, absolutely. I don't care what we're doing. We say, yes, we'll be there. What can we bring? And that's what life is about. It's about those precious moments, as you said.
Well, and I think that's beautiful that they still want to have you over, because so many times once they've gone out and they're with their friends, they don't necessarily want to have the parents around. So I think that's great. I think that speaks a lot in regards to how it is that you raise them. Now, a lot of our listeners are parents who are dealing with teenagers and in some cases are struggling. And so what I'd like to do is I'm going to share a story, but then ask you to maybe give some suggestions of some of the things that you can do when you're trying to make these adjustments and your kids are already teenagers. And the story that came to mind to me was a case to where we were called in at the last minute to transport a young girl to a specialized wilderness program because the information that was being sent to me was she's completely out of control. And I, fortunately, I was fairly close to the location, so I drove immediately there. And my office is saying, get there as quickly as you can. We can hear all kinds of things being broken in the background. So I rush out to the family's medical facility, and I get there, and they're all huddled into this waiting room, and they're pointing in the other room. She's in there. And so I go in, and I grab one of the females, and I said, you're now working for me. I need a female present with me. You're coming with me because my female agent isn't here yet. And with as many things as I'm hearing broken, we need to get in there now. So anyway, so we went in, and I started talking to her, and using a little bit of an NLP type of thing, to where I sort of matched and paced and brought her down, and then asked the question, what is going on? Why, why are you doing this? I said, the people in the other room just said that it's your birthday. She said, yes, and pointed outside the window and said, and look at that. I said, what? I said, there's a Mustang convertible out there with a bow on it. She said, I know. Last year, for his 16th, my brother got a convertible BMW. This just isn't fair. So going along the lines, and obviously it's a very extreme, but going along those lines, you know, a lot of us as parents have spoiled our kids or have made, given them too much. Some everything has gone fine. Others, this is now leading into some very difficult situations for them. Yes. What are some of the things that parents can do to slowly make the adjustment? Because we know you can't go cold turkey and say, okay, all of a sudden we're all going to do this. It's probably not going to work with teenagers. So if you can share something, I think it will be really beneficial to our listeners.
Well, thank you for sharing that dramatic story. And you're right, we see and hear so many things like that. It's and you're right, we want to spoil our kids, and the fact that any of our kids get to drive, our four kids, drive, they have cars, and automatically puts us in the top 2% of the world's wealth. Right. So we're very, very well off here. And when we think of a situation like that, a couple thoughts come to mind. The first is, where did the children first learn this behavior? Right. And if it was something that they perhaps caught from other adults in their life, then there might be a change that needs to start to happen actually with the adults more than with the children. Right? Because the children are going to continue to learn. And so if this happened to be a family that was used to lots of material possessions, perhaps starting to really think about how important those possessions really are versus real joy in our kids' lives, real sanity in our kids' lives, and thinking and comparing themselves not with, these baubles that they have in, because you can never compare one car to another unless it was exactly the identical same car, but really think about, who am I that really makes me valuable and says that I am who I am and stands out, and not this car that I drive or don't drive? So I think one is, it starts with the parents and what kind of examples we're willing to set with our family.
And that's true. That's Bob's absolutely right. It has to start with us. But if the damage has already been done, so to speak, and the expectations are already set, you kind of have to wonder what you're going to do now with all of that. It's what will you do with what I have given you? So if she has a car, who will she pick up in that car? Who will she take? Will she, drop off things to a homeless shelter by using her car? Will she help a friend who doesn't have a ride to school? I mean, you can use the car for goodness and for good things, but you just have to show her that. Will she take care of the car? Will she wash it? Or is it expected for mom and dad to send her to the car wash every week? What will she do and take care of what has been given to her? Will she share it with others? Will she use it for God's goodness? Or will she just use it as a display like everything else that's out there? We can start to teach our kids to use the things that we've given them for good. It's not going to be easy. I mean, we have never had a story in our lives that have been that extreme, but yet we've done things where we didn't understand our kids. We didn't know that there are four different personalities in all of them, and that just because I think we have to, take away their cell phone because that's the punishment, doesn't mean that's the right one for that child. just like we are all different, we have to know the personalities of our children and what it takes to live with them and teach them and love them. And then that's, you know, you just got to know who your kids are and how you can relate to them.
I love that.
Go
ahead. I'm sorry, Bob.
This is just a great example of, quite frankly, why we wanted to write our book and launch this ministry that we have to begin with. Because we, as Susan said earlier on the call, we've seen so many stories like this, and people have told us their pressing desires and their where they're at. And we really want our book and our lives to help people from a preventative landscape rather than a prescriptive one. So that's why we wrote the book, so we hear less and less stories like the one that you just shared with us.
Yeah, and, you know, my background being on the treatment side with, you know, young adults with drug addiction, unfortunately, we're past the preventative side of it. And I think, you know, as I hear you guys speak, I think of my the line my six-year-old says, you get what you get and you don't get upset, which unfortunately is a nice saying, but it's not as simple as that, you know, with emotions and feelings. But as you guys are talking, you know, I'm really excited about this book. I see it as a really nice holiday gift, actually, as we're coming up to the holiday season. But I'm wondering, really, as far as age, you know, is it the teenager, is it the teenage kind of age range that can start to really conceptualize this idea, or are we talking about an older demographic?
Absolutely can start with our teenagers, absolutely, because like I said earlier, they face the social comparison just like we do, just on their own level.
Yeah.
And it could be in sports, you know, are they good enough, you know, that type of thing. So absolutely, start with our kids and discuss it with them. You know, they have Facebook and they put it out there and their whole lives are in an instant second. Everybody can see what they're doing or what they're not doing. And sometimes, you know, our lives are just like on the cutting room floor. Why didn't I do that? I wonder how they got to go to Hawaii. Why can't I go? We should have that. And we find ourselves comparing everything and it's out there at the touch of a button. And sometimes we can read this book with our kids, which we do, and then we talk about it, and we give examples. And even in the upcoming Bible study that we're going to have, our discussion guide, it asks questions like that. You know, how do you have these challenges in your family, and what are you going to do with them? And it's absolutely something that can go from the teenage age on all the way up until we're, you know, older, like our parents. My mom is just now learning to get rid of stuff because she felt she needed to hold on to it because she was in World War II and just felt she needed to hang on to everything. And so now she's, you know, 78 and calls me and says, Susie, I'm going to get rid of, you know, my storages that I really don't need. Okay, that's great, Mom, yay. So, you know, it can go from teenage all the way until you finally get your Joneses moment.
And with these teenagers, you know, I get it that, you know, the key is to look and act like everybody else. And, you know, I remember my own middle school days where it's funny because my parents, I came from a middle class background, but I went to school in a public school and I was embarrassed because my parents had nice cars. So I'd have them drop me off down the street so I could portray a similar kind of gritty upbringing that the other, you know, teenagers had, which is kind of ironic now. It's the opposite of keeping up with the Joneses. But the thing that fascinates me is I'm curious about really, and you sort of answered it by saying read with them, is, you know, how do we know that these things work. We know that reading this book would be really helpful. We know that having something to believe in, like a church or a God, has, you know, automatic psychological positive consequences. But in your guys' opinion, is there an easy, for, you know, parents listening, is there an easy way to kind of build that bridge, or any tricks that you guys could think of that would be helpful for parents listening on how to get their kids, you know, kind of to start thinking along these lines?
Well, let me go first. Bob will probably answer that as well. But I am a firm believer that sometimes we need to listen to what they're saying to us, because the answer is in the answer. And they will give it to you. They will tell you what's the matter. They will tell you what they want. They will tell you what they're feeling if we just stop and listen. Too often, all we want to do is think about how we're going to reply and what we're going to say and how we're going to shut it down. But if we actually listen to what our kids are saying, you might find out what the answer is, and then you can help them.
And one really fun trick that Susan and I learned and used really effectively was, I'll give you an example. Let's say young teenage boy or girl want a certain pair of pants, jeans, and they happen to cost $120. Well, we were never really, we weren't quite compelled to want to spend $120 on a pair of pants. And so what we might say was, well, I'll tell you what, we're not going to get you that pair of pants. What we're going to do instead is we're going to give you $100 close to that pair of pants, and you decide what you want to do with it. You can go buy that pair of pants from store X, or you might go to store Y, and you might be able to walk out with a pair of jeans and three blouses or three tops all together. And we start to put some of the decision-making into the children's hands and let them start to make those sorts of value-based decisions or walk through their version of our need acronym of, do I really need those pants versus what I'd really like to have is three new blouses and a pair of pants. It starts to transform the way they think about things because it's not just being given to them. Mm-hmm. They're being forced to think critically about the decisions they make.
Yeah, and I have a story very similar to that. And one of my teenagers, we were in a store, and there was a particular kind of tennis shoe that he wanted. And it had a particular emblem on it, and that was the one that he wanted. And it was a $120 pair of tennis shoes. And he kept going back to it. We would go somewhere else in the store, and he'd go, "No, Dad, you don't understand. I need that pair of shoes." And I said, "Okay, let's stop here." I said, "What you want that pair of shoes, okay? I understand you want it, but you don't need that pair of shoes." "No, Dad, I need that pair of shoes." And I said, "Okay, here's the deal." I said, and I saw another pair of shoes that looked exactly like it, only without the emblem, that was $50. And I said, "Here's $50. And I said, "You want those shoes. You need a new pair of shoes. So now what I see is you need another $70 if you want that other pair of shoes." And there are things you can do to work to earn it to make that happen. So at least he understood that, you know, you're going to work and earn that much to be able to do it. So yes, I agree. There are things that you can do rather than constantly just giving them whatever it is that they asked for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And you know, one point that we really try to make in our book is, you know, keeping up with the Joneses, as Susan mentioned earlier. Yes, we think about the materialism, and in today's culture, we call it, you know, keeping up with the Kardashians, if you want to really contemporize it, right?
Yep.
That's where you think they got the name of their show from. And so it's this issue that it actually goes a lot deeper, though, than just materialism. See, when we wrote our book, I had to really go deep and try to figure out what was it that I was missing in my life from the inside that forced me to want to go out and live a certain lifestyle to prove who I was. And for me, it was identities I talked about, and for Susan, it was acceptance. Very different things. And so often what's really driving the behavior on the outside are things on the inside.
Yes.
That we're trying to cover up through, you know, the looks, to so that we can look like we're happy, look like we're successful, or look like we have it all together. But on the inside, we might be all torn up. And that's really where the real work happens at.
And as we wind down, I wanted to make sure all of our listeners know the name of the book, Who Are the Joneses Anyways? Stop Living Someone Else's Life and Start Becoming Who You Are Meant to Be. Amazon is a great place to start looking for the book. What's next for you guys?
Well, Susan mentioned earlier, is we just continue to have this passion to want to continue to write, speak, and coach on this issue and other issues, but really around helping people discover who they are and why they're here so they can lead these intentional, authentic lives that they're created for. And so part of it is continuing to promote the book. And Susan mentioned we have a six-week discussion guide that's coming out. We have another book in our heads already. We're trying to stay focused on book one to start before we start digging into book two. And so there's more things that we're going to do and expanding the life coaching that we do as well.
And people interested
in life
Amazon,
coaching,
how would they reach out to you?
Well, they can do it through a couple of ways. They can go to our website, whoarethejonesesanyway.com, and leave us a message there and watch a book trailer and learn some more about the authors, or email us directly at authors@whoarethejonesesanyway.com. And I'll add one more note. This week, we happen to be running a promotion because of that movie that's out that they're trying to ride on our coattails. and the Kindle version of Who Are the Joneses Anyway is actually just 99 cents until Friday. And so that's about a 90% wow. reduction that our publisher is running this week. So,
and that's on Amazon or the website?
On Amazon, the Kindle version of the book, on the Amazon Kindle.
Wow, that's great. Well, on behalf of Alan and the Answers for the Family show, we really wanted to thank you guys for coming on.
Well, thank you. We're so excited to be here, and thank you for just spending time with us.
Yeah, thank you for allowing us on your show. We had a great time.
Well, and you're very welcome. And when the second book is ready, please keep us posted.
Absolutely.
We also want people to make sure to put us on your calendar and tune in the next Monday when our guest Naomi Richards will share with us her new book, Being Me, and Loving It, Stories and Activities to Help Build Self-Esteem, Confidence, Positive Body Image, and Resilience in Children. And if you missed or you want to share our show with your friends, please visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com. You may also subscribe or resubmit your name to download your free copy of the Attitude of Gratitude Journal, your 21-day guide to achieving the quality of thankfulness through self-discovery. And the next time you are on Facebook and Twitter, please remember to stop by our page and check some of our latest posts. And if you like them, please like us and spread the word. For Alan and Matt Polacek, we thank you always for listening to Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.